Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 243. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me today is not just my 80 gray co-host, but my IBWAA 2023 Baseball Writer of the Year co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. If I had a soundboard, I'd be queuing up the John Cena. Dun, 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 dun. The champ is here. Mr. Clegg, congrats, sir. How you doing tonight?
Thank you. Thank you. That's a good feeling. Now we have two award-winning co-hosts on the show. When you put that in the bio of the show, for sure. Multi-time winners, as you are the FSWA Writer of the Year. Are you, you're reigning Writer of the Year, correct?
No, Nick Pollock is.
That's right. That was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I was the previous year. And then, yeah, it's weird because it's like 2021 Writer of the Year, but I didn't give it to me until 2022 because they do it the next, I think they announced it, and the finalists were announced in like, I think it was early January, and then they didn't do the announcement of the actual winners until like mid to late February. It was like a 6 week gap, which was like,
yeah,
nudic. Let's just announce them now. You don't have to wait 6 weeks.
It's, right. Yeah, it's brutal to wait. So, yeah, it's a cool feeling for sure. And very blessed and thankful to everybody that supports us and supports the work that we do. And thank you for the support of the show all year. This is the first off-season show. The AFL is starting in about an hour as we are hitting record here. So as we get off, we'll be able to watch the first AFL game, which is awesome. Jackson Jobe's going to be on the bump. So
yeah,
I'm pumped for that. And we are under a month until we will be in Arizona for the AFL and first pitch. So it's coming, and I am very, very excited.
Yeah, what a way to kick off the Arizona Fall League than with one of the top pitching prospects in all of baseball, maybe the top. He's in that discussion for top pitching prospect. I think you have him as your top pitching prospect now, don't you?
I do.
Yep, he's right there for me. It's a glob up there, like, you know, four guys or so. I can't go wrong with any which one of those guys at number one. But yeah, it's weird, man. It's obviously we still got baseball going on. You know, you got the postseason kicking up soon, and you know, Arizona Fall League starting tonight. But after this is our first, you know, quote unquote off season episode of the 23-24 off season, feels kind of weird. But hey, 2024 prep starts now. Obviously, Dynasty never stopped, so you could always do things to improve your team, whether it be for the short term or the long term. I'm sure FYPDs are be kicking off pretty soon here. I know somebody tweeted at me recently that they had theirs today on what is today? Monday. Yeah. On Monday. So yeah, we'll get those already swinging off here, and we'll get probably another FYPD episode pretty soon here. We did one during the season. We'll probably do like a mock draft of sorts coming up here pretty soon. Get some guests on for that. But today we're not really talking players. We're not really talking any of our usual stuff here. We're kind of doing like a post-mortem of sorts for the 2023 season, kind of for us personally, as you know, both as fantasy players, as analysts, you know, as writers, and you know, stuff that we've learned this season, stuff that we're looking to, that we already have tried to improve on, maybe looking to improve upon heading into 2024. So it's kind of like a reflection period of sorts, and now, we'll get into that right here in a second, but before we do, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg, I'm EricCross04, show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review, and make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolShedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our rankings, plenty of off-season content from each of us, AFL content, FYPD content. Lots of good stuff there. So make sure to check out both of those platforms. We greatly appreciate the support. Let's hop into it right now, Chris. You want to lead it off here? Something that you learned, or just wherever you want to start this episode off with, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so I've thought about this kind of all day as we've talked about the topic that we discuss going this direction. So I thought about it in the different aspects that you kind of mentioned as far as like playing side of fantasy, the like evaluation side, the writing side, etc. So I've kind of, I guess, breaking them down in a couple of different categories. So yeah, I guess we can start with some transparency about like the playing side. And you know, I think for me it was an up and down year. I would say it was more good than bad. Like if you look at like a pure return on investment standpoint, it was a pretty good year. I end up winning a $400 DC that I did with Bob Osgood. So that returns a pretty good profit. And we were in the overall prize for a while. We were up to 23rd overall, which was a lot of fun. And I think that one of the things I've learned is for me is that like having a co-manager to, you know, spit ideas off of, to talk through things with is very helpful. That's kind of one of the things that I guess in this state, like where I am right now, like it's very helpful, because I think a lot of people just assume that, you know, this is what we do every day full time. But for me, like this is just a side gig. Like I have a full time job and, you know, I'm grinding on fantasy content for endless hours and trying to be a good player too. And that can become tough at times, and it becomes kind of just exhausting to an extent, especially grinding on fab leagues, etc. And daily leagues really kicked my butt. Like the leagues that had daily lineups and daily fab or waivers became a lot this year for me, and those really suffered. And so I'm going to pare those down next year. I've already stepped out of a couple of those daily leagues, but I do think the idea of having a co-manager is pretty good thing for me, and something that I found is pretty helpful actually. And so something that I'm actually going to look to do more of next year, like even in my dynasty leagues that I'm in, just having someone that be willing to co-manage and step in and, you know, just have ideas to bounce off of and talk through things with. And I know you have some experience with co-managing. You won the tag team league last year, and so I know you've had some experience with that, if you'd like to speak to it at all. But for me, like, I've managed several teams with Bob Osgood, and it's been a very good experience and something I hope to kind of expand out and do a little more. So I learned that relying on others is very helpful at times.
Would you say it's been an Osgood experience? You put it on a tee for me. As a dad, I couldn't leave that hanging curveball there. But yeah, no, I have had some experience co-managing. Yeah, most recently with, you know, the tag team, like you mentioned, with Michael Govier. We did that for 2 years. We had to bow out this past year, but first year, so in 2021, we were kind of in the thick of it all season. It was like a four team race for the most part, and then we kind of had a bad couple of days in the season, ended up dropping from first to third, I believe it was. So still got the money. I think it was top three or four paid out. And then this past year, we got into first place probably somewhere in the middle of May and never looked back. I forget how much we won by, but it was to the point where it was like middle of August. So I'm like, dude, unless we just don't set our lineup, we have this thing won. So we won it by a good 15 plus points. And you know, with me and something I'll encourage too, if you do kind of to add on what Chris was saying, if you do co-manage, try to find someone that's at least got a different style than you. Yeah. Like me and Michael Govier, you know, Govier is a phenomenal baseball mind. Great dude. Like one of the best dudes he's one of the best people you'll ever meet. And just, you know, an all around funny, entertaining guy. But our playing styles were a bit different. That's kind of why we kind of linked up because we had that differing styles. And that can really do wonders. It can help you guys throughout the season and also make you a better player. Like kind of seeing how he went about doing things and him seeing how I went about doing things. And, you know, that was very helpful. And we got off the first year we did the draft through like Twitter DM, just talking that way, which is terrible. I would never advise that ever again. And the second year we hopped on right on here in StreamYard and we had a, you know, stream going the entire night. Now Leanne was his wife was in the background too. She was chatting too. And we just talked and worked things out. And throughout the season, you know, did we agree on everything? Absolutely not. But you know, we compromised. We worked it out. We both had that strategy we wanted to get, you know, kind of lock in, and it worked out well for us. So it was really fun, though. Like it brings that different dynamic. And I've had other co-managers in the past, you know, various redraft and dynasty formats, and that's a lot of fun. You know, I like having, you know, I wouldn't go all my leagues co-manager, but it is fun. Like I said, it does add a different element. It helps you because I don't know, like if we were singly managing that team that we won last year in 2022, I don't know if either one of us would have won it, the league, but just kind of like the blend of our two styles worked really well together. And I said we had a very successful year. So definitely advise it. It's a lot of fun. It gives you a different dynamic. And it helped me as a player as well personally. So I absolutely would advise that for sure. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, like, I think that kind of is like just says, like, you can always be learning from others. And
yep.
Having somebody to bounce ideas off of is very helpful. So I guess that was something that I learned this year is that can be very helpful, especially in the midst of very busy life. Like the season's crazy and doing sure everything is. We do, like, you know, I still think that, you know, the dream would be to do this, to do baseball full time. And maybe that's something hopefully we can do one day and have more time. But right now, I mean, like it's tough trying to manage a family and a full-time job and produce the baseball content and win at fantasy. So
right.
Like from that standpoint, I'd say that's why I found it helpful.
Yeah. And it is tough. Like I would love to I like my day job and all, don't get me wrong, but I do some days where I'm, you know, at the day job and it's like, let's just say it's like 1 PM and I'm like, man, I would just love to just be, you know, recording the podcast right now or writing an article or working on my rankings, something like that. But yeah, it is tough, you know, and I think this is kind of like a little dive into our own personal lives here for those that don't know. Like obviously Chris and I are both parents, we're both fathers. You know, I have my two kids, so I get them up every morning, get them off to school, do the day job, come home, you know, cook dinner, you know, do the dad thing. And once they go to bed, which my son goes to bed around like 8, my daughter, she's a little older, so around 9, that's when, you know, I start doing writing, podcasting, etc. So and some nights it is tough. Some nights, you know, even though I love doing it, obviously, and hope everyone knows that Chris and I absolutely love what we do, both, you know, podcasting, writing, playing fantasy baseball. You know, some nights I just want to sit and watch a movie. You know, so it's like, I don't want to write, you know, write an article, but, and some nights I do, you know, try to take a little bit of time off, but trying, I think kind of leads me into, you know, something else I wanted to say is like trying to find that balance, both in terms of, like you kind of alluded to this a little bit too, when in the open number of fantasy leagues, I overdid myself too much this year. I was trying to do like put out so much content, playing so many leagues. And it's funny, is I think you and I both said something similar like last offseason. We're like, oh, we should, you know, got to cut back our leagues a little bit. And I don't think either one of us really did a great job of that. Maybe we did a little bit, but you know, still trying to find that balance. You know, obviously I want to put out, you know, as much great content as I can, but at the same time, you know, try to be the best fantasy player I can, because, you know, that's how I started. I didn't start, you know, as an analyst first and foremost. I started as a player, was playing ever since, you know, almost middle school, early high school, you know, with my buddies, and still have the same home keeper league that we started back in sophomore year of high school, which I just lost the finals on because the damn scorer in Houston had to change the Tucker home run back to a triple. If my buddy Greg's listening, he's probably laughing right now because he's the one that was won the league. But anyway, I digress. But, you know, obviously we started as players and kind of grew into, you know, analysts over time through various opportunities. And it's hard to find that balance because, you know, first and foremost, obviously I, you know, make some money, you know, a little bit of, like Chris said, it's like a side gig for us, you know, kind of supplement our income, support our family. But at the same time, you know, I don't want to do bad in my fantasy leagues. And this year I kind of, some of my daily leagues suffered a little bit. I'd be, you know, cranking on an article, and also I'd be like, oh crap, I gotta do fab. So I think that's something I'm gonna try to find better balance. I think I found a good balance on the content side, but I think I need to find that balance between content and playing to try to kind of maximize both sides of it. I don't want either side to suffer. So I think I'm gonna cut back a little bit next year, be more strategic with the leagues that I do, and not just say yes to like every league that comes my way. It's hard to say no, right? Like, you're like, oh, no, I'm done. I don't need any more leagues. And you know, someone's like, oh, you want to join this league? I'm like, all right, you know, like,
sure.
twist my arm, why don't you? So,
right.
And then, you know, then some of those leagues are the ones that I have, you know, I'm struggling to find time to get to, whether it's lineups, fab, or whatever. So, yeah, I think definitely finding that balance, you know, is something I'm going to try to do a better job of next season.
Yeah, and I think that brings up a good point of time management. Like, time management is an important skill in life, and also in our busy lives. Time management is highly important. How you manage your time playing fantasy baseball, producing content is important. I think this year I learned that, man, I wasted a lot of time on Twitter, like just scrolling, like, and it was not productive stuff. There's a lot of crap on Twitter, like if we're just on our X, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of crap on all social media, and it's easy to like get caught up in that. But I think my balance is just getting on to post stuff, to answer questions, and spend time doing what's productive. Like, productivity is not scrolling on Twitter. So like, you're not going to be a better fantasy baseball player by the, and you could, like, you can, and I say that lightly as I'm, you know, I'm kind of taking a step back. Like, you can become a better fantasy baseball player from spending time and reading others' work. So don't get me wrong. Like, don't, like, hear me out with what I'm saying, but like, mindlessly scrolling is a waste of time. Like, find time to be productive. Use all the time that you have wisely, because, you know, at the end of the day, like, our lives are really short. Like, we think about the grand scheme of life, and taking every moment and making the most of it. And yeah, I mean, like you said, sometimes it is good just to, you want to sit back and just relax, and those times are great, but we don't get better by just sitting back and doing nothing. We don't get better by scrolling Twitter. We get better by finding ways to grow and to learn. And so that's something that I try to do every single day, is to find some way to be better, be a better analyst, be a better player, be a better evaluator, prospects, whatever it is. Like,
yep.
I need to do one thing each day to become better. And if I do that, then I would say it's a success. like no matter how the leagues turned out, and this is kind of one of those things like process over results that people, you know, throw out there a lot, but it's true. Like if the process was good and if I feel like my process gets better every day, then I think the results are going to come with it. And that comes from being a better, like every aspect of playing the game of fantasy baseball to watching minor league baseball to being at games and finding something new or talking to a scout or someone that's there and trying to learn from somebody. Like those things are highly valuable. And so I think that especially as having a kid that's gotten a little older, that's 2.5 now, that's very active and involved in things, like, you know, you've got to be present in every moment. And I would encourage that to not only in baseball, but life, like just be present. And, you know, I'm bad about being on my phone. And something that I've tried to work on is just not being on my phone as much and being present in every moment, because that's how I think we get better at the game of baseball, fantasy baseball, being about better evaluators and just better parents and better, you know, husbands, whatever it is, like just being present in the moment. So kind of getting off the baseball topic, but that's just something that I think is important that I did learn this year that did have a lot to do with baseball in that sense.
You know, I think a lot of us are guilty of that. It's just like scrolling the phone, whether it be Twitter, you know, TikTok, Instagram, whatever it may be. I am very guilty of that. There's many, many nights, you know, I'll get in the bed and I go to bed late. I'm one of those like 4 or 5 hour night sleepers, but let's say I get in bed. Let's just say it's 1 a.m. All right. I'll be on my phone for half an hour just scrolling Twitter. You know, maybe I'll look at some YouTube, you know, something like that. And all of a sudden it's been half an hour and I'm like, man, okay, did I gain anything from that half an hour? No, all I lost was half an hour of sleep. And like, was it really that important to, you know, laugh at a video or scroll Twitter or X, whatever? But no, it's not. And I'm trying to do a better job of that myself. And definitely trying to just get better every day. And it doesn't matter how many followers you have, doesn't matter what site you write for, how long you've been doing this, what your title is, you know, how good you are, how much money you've made. You can always learn. I'm still learning every day. Like on the, you know, let's just name some people off the top of my head. I'm trying to learn how to be better, you know, analysis of pitching, you know, Nick Pollock, Paul Spohr, Alex Fass, you know, Alex Chamberlain, so some phenomenal baseball minds. On the prospect side of things, you know, Prospect Dynasty, you know, James Anderson, phenomenal. Jesse Roche, phenomenal. You know, Chris Blessing, Jeff Ponce. Did I say James Anderson already? James Anderson, yeah. Chris Welsh, you know, so many good people that I'm just trying to learn from every single day. And I've learned, especially on the evaluating side, I learned a lot in the, you know, still to this day, you know, first from Jeff Ponce, you know, in the beginning, a lot from Chris Blessing. You know, I learned a lot from Chris too. Like I try to learn from everybody, Chris Clegg. There's so many Chris's in this dang
there
industry.
Are a lot of Chris's.
But I try to learn from Chris Clegg too. And, you know, it just not ever being content, like finding, you know, especially if that's your goal is to grow, like it takes work to grow. And I hope anybody listening to this now that might be new in the industry and, you know, looking to grow their name, you know, Chris and I think I speak for Chris with this as well. We're always here to help out, you know, shoot, you know, reach out to us, you know, in some way, and we'll try to help any way we can. And we hope that we're able to, you know, help, you know, the younger, not younger, but then the newer kind of generation of writers and analysts kind of grow as well, because it's all about paying it forward. I wouldn't be where I was, you know, where I am today without the help of others along the way, whether it be giving me opportunities at sites, and like right now, you know, the great people at Roto Baller, and Vlad Sedler and the gang over at FTN, you know, shout out to Fantrax. That's where I got my start, obviously. And the people there, Doug Anderson, editor at Fantrax. So I kind of ran the site with a great guy. He helped me, you know, be able to, you know, better on the back end of not just writing, but like how to like maximize my article in terms of like getting eyes on it. And all these things matter too. So yeah, I'm never content. Even right now it's currently 8:45 p.m. on October 2nd. The fantasy season ended, you know, a little over 24 hours ago. And like, I'm already thinking there's 2024, you know, for redraft purposes, trying to get better. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on in Dynasty, you know, rankings, content, AFL, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we're still doing podcasts weekly here on Toolshed and obviously on Twitter, you know, trying to put out, you know, useful content there too. So always trying to grow. But at the same time, that kind of just what I just said kind of led me into another thing I wanted to talk about here, Chris. In terms of being a content creator, and this is something I kind of was in a discussion in one of my, you know, DM threads on Twitter a few days back about the blend of your content being useful and your content being entertaining. Because obviously, if your content's not useful, you know, why are you even doing it, right? Obviously, you're trying to, above, you know, number one, above everything else, we're trying to be helpful, you know, have people improve in their leagues, you know, be better players. And seriously, when we get those messages or those tweets at the end of the season, like, hey, yeah, thanks, you helped me win my league, or you helped me turn this team from 18th to second, or just you just helped me have fun. You know, even if it's just that, you helped me have an enjoyable fantasy baseball season. Honestly, that means the freaking world to us. Like, that's why we do this. Obviously, we love what we do. We love making content. But just to hear those, you know, and see those tweets at the end of each season is literally like the best thing in the world. But Chris, what were your thoughts on, you know, when you're kind of, you know, whether it be obviously podcast rankings or not so much rankings, but like an article or so, what's that blend? Do you try to find that blend between having it be useful, but at the same time, you don't want it to be boring, right? Anybody can just, you know, sit there, list off stats, right? You got to have a little bit of the entertainment factor too.
Yeah. And I think that's probably something that I struggle more with writing than like on a podcast, because like over time, like I think you learn how to use your voice on a podcast to be more engaging and to hold interest. And I think it's a little easier to kind of get out how you're feeling about a player when we talk about them on a podcast. Like you can kind of feel emotion when somebody talks. So like having that emotion brought in, like, I do think helps. And like you hear, like when you listen to interviews and when you hear like coaches talk about players, like that's the kind of vibe that we want to have. It's like the entertainment side of the fact that our podcast isn't boring and just, I mean, you said reading off numbers, and like anybody can get behind a microphone and do this, but how do we make it applicable? How do we make it fun? And I think that's something that probably is something that I really still need to work on, but in writing form too, like, I would say like my sense of humor is, I don't know, it's like not great. And so that's probably a struggle to like inject humor into articles and make it seem like it fits. Occasionally, like there's like obvious fits where it's like, okay, like I can easily like put this in there and people will notice and they comment and they think it's really good. So like that's something I try to be conscious of. But sometimes, and I think that is something too, like that you have to slow down, because like when we're trying to churn out content, it's like, okay, like it's just easy just to write. And we can miss these little things that we can put in here and there that really help with the entertainment factor. Like, honestly, like this generation is so visual. So like having videos of players is something that's very good in articles, like, and like GIFs and videos, like that sort of stuff is helpful. Visuals, I think, are very good to have. And so like, that's a bit of an entertainment factor, but when you're reading, like you want to be able to like hear the person talk about it. Like when I read articles, sometimes like I'll hear the person's voice. Like you'll hear like Bubba talking about a player on his pod, or you'll hear like Nick or Alex talking about a player. And so like, you know, having your own voice and making it unique is important. And there's also a balance, because I do feel like some people will try to be somebody they're not, and that's obvious. So you don't want to like push it too much and be someone that you're not. But also, I think finding who you are, like finding that niche, is important. And finding your voice and how you fit, I think, does matter a lot. And when you find that, you're more able to inject that into all your work, and it really shows. Like the passion, like I want my passion for this to bleed into everything that I do. And so I think if you're listening and you're wanting to like create content, like don't be somebody you're not. Like you shouldn't just try to write like your favorite fantasy baseball writer. Don't be that person. Like you're not that person. That's okay. But there's a place for you too. Like there's a certain place for you and for your voice to fit. So find your voice and use it the best as you can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. 100% agree. And that's something I put, I wrote an article, I think it was like last, probably in the preseason, back in March or so, about like, hey, you looking to get in the industry, looking to grow, here's some, you know, some tips or whatever. And that was one of them I put, like, be unique, you know, be yourself, but stand out. You know, you don't have to stand out in an outlandish way or anything like that. But, you know, there's so many good analysts in this industry right now doing a lot of good stuff there. You need to stand out if you want to grow. And if you want to gain a following, you know, write for great sites, you know, maybe earn a little bit of money along the way. You got to stand out a little bit, but at the same time, be true to yourself and really just know what you want, you know, out of this, whether it's content, you know, what you want from being a fantasy baseball player, how many leagues you want to play in. Just know what you want and kind of make sure you kind of go for that goal. And one person that really influenced, I don't know if influenced, but the reason why I kind of wanted to have a little, I call it professional flair. Like, you want to have, you know, a little bit of flair, but be it in a good way. And so someone that I used to, you know, back in the old days, this is like what, 15 years ago, maybe, you know, when I was really starting to get into, you know, fantasy baseball in high school and whatnot, and you know, one of the, you know, the OGs back in the day, and one of them was, you know, Brad Evans. He was, I think, with Yahoo at the time, along with like Brandon Funston and all them, Scott Pianowski. And he was always, he had like that flair, right? But he wouldn't go like over the top. And obviously when he gets on his videos, he's kind of a loud guy, but you know, I was like, all right, this guy stands out to me. Like, this guy is not just, you know, putting numbers and words into an article. Like, he's doing that, but he's making it so it's enjoyable and easy to digest, as, you know, as me at 16, just a reader, just a guy, you know, on a Yahoo league back then, you know, playing, you know, with my buddies. So trying to, you know, stand out, you know, but also be yourself. I think that's really huge and something I've, you know, it can take several years to really find that. And, you know, even Chris and I, who, you know, are, you know, more established in this industry, like, we're still trying to, you know, I know for me personally, I'm still trying to find that blend. And I think recently I've found it probably more than I have in the past, but it's always something hard to find. But once you do, I think you'll be happy where you're at for sure. Kind of going over to, you know, the prospect, kind of the ranking and evaluation side of it. One thing I kind of wrote down for this area, Chris, is something I always get in this trap every year of overranking the first wave of DSL breakouts. Like, you know, this year was what? We had Rainer Arias. We had Wobin Francisca. Yep. We had Luis Guanipa, you know, a handful of others. And, you know, a lot of these guys, they had that huge breakout, and then they kind of, you know, not fizzled out, but took a step back, you know? So I'm like, all right, why did I go so high in them? You know, maybe I still believe in them, but I think I get in that trap of just being so enamored. And something I've tried to work on forever is not, you know, the shiny new toy, whether it be the rookie in the major leagues or the 16, 17 year old DSL guy with all the tools and all the performance that's breaking out. I've tried not to go too high on them. And because it usually bites me, and I end up trying to, you know, adjust my rankings back down over the course of the DSL season. So that's something I'm trying to, you know, maybe be a little more cognizant of moving forward when we have these big breakouts. Like, oh, this guy's already got 5 home runs, 4 steals, hitting .380 in this first, you know, week and a half. Like, all right, we got to remember that these are still very small sample sizes of very young players playing against, especially, you know, for hitters, with a pitching, you know, pitching and catching battery combination usually isn't the greatest in those levels. So if, oh, they get all these steals, you know, or this, you know, they're getting on base at a .480 clip. Like, all right, they're walking a lot because these pitchers aren't, you know, don't have the greatest command and strike throwing ability, and these catchers don't have the greatest pop times, et cetera, et cetera. So I got to try to, like, remember to dial myself back when that, you know, first wave of breakouts, and really maybe more so dig into their profiles a bit more, and as much as you can with, you know, having as little information as we have on these guys. But that's something for me personally I've struggled with. I don't know, so that's something you find yourself struggling with, Chris?
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I think it's something that I've certainly gotten better at. Not perfect, but I think that that's probably, so you can say like that's something that I've learned a lot. And I think especially now I'm not even talking like the DSL only, but like especially like the lower levels of the minors too. I think this stresses the importance of watching the game of baseball, because it's so easy to just get enamored by, like you said, five home runs in seven games, you know, for this player. But like, there's so many factors that matter when we're talking about minor league baseball from the standpoint of what kind of park are they in. There's some absurd minor league parks that are just like crazy, crazy home run parks. Like, we're talking like 340 to center. Like, Funko Field is, it's totally bizarre. Like, one of the craziest fields you'll find. Just Google it. Like, also, scoring is bad. Like, you have these score, like, I see it all the time at games. Like, they'll record a, something wrong. It's like a hit that's, or they'll record as a hit. It's like so clearly an error. So then, pitcher gets inflated for five earned runs. I literally saw this happen. Like, it was against Luis Perales at the end of this year that he got tagged for five earned. And that inning, there were two errors that would have got him out of the inning with zero earned runs. And I'm like, this is just totally, totally off base. And so kind of a tangent to say that I think you have to be very careful with what the box scores say, because they're not all created equal. Pitch tracking, like, they're having like interns and players sit in the stands and literally just like if you try to track the pitches on like the MILB app, it's horrific, like not accurate at all. And so like trying to derive like certain numbers from that is just not ideal. And I think that coming to grasp with that, it's made me say like, okay, what matters? And like, how much of, you know, each kind of factor matters when it comes to a prospect eval, like when I'm ranking a player. And the box score numbers honestly have become less and less. And I actually have kind of come to grips with, I think it kind of being like a rolling scale. So like at the DSL, like I'd say the box score performance matters like 10% of an evaluation. Like it doesn't matter, because there's so much bad pitching. Like, guys can't throw a strike. Their misses are like over the heart of the zone with like an 88 mile an hour fastball. And it's important to remember that like 70% of the players playing in the DSL aren't going to move past that level. They will unfortunately get cut and or either stay in the DSL a couple years and then get cut. The majority of the DSL players don't move up. They just don't have the skills. And so I think it's kind of like a bit of a rolling scale where performance matters a little bit more as we move up, but only to an extent. I'd say performance in AA actually matters the most. I think the best baseball is played at AA. We even got thrown a wrench there this year because you had the Southern League using the tacky ball. And so it totally skewed everybody's numbers. Like, not even relevant in a lot of ways. Just look at the first and the second half splits in the Southern League and the players that it affected. It certainly made a big impact. So those things aren't quantifiable, but those things certainly matter with prospect evaluations. And so being able to filter through, and it makes it hard because, yeah, it'd be easy to look and sit down and say, all right, man, like, look, yeah, the Fangraphs page looks really good. But there's so much more that matters. You've got guys playing through injuries. And this is a long tangent to go back to say that I think that more than ever, performance doesn't matter as much in the minor leagues. There's going to be a lot of people that are watching performances and looking at numbers of players in the AFL starting this week, starting tonight, when the reality is the majority of players sent to the AFL are sent there to work on something, to change something in their batting stance, to change something in the swing, to work on a new pitch, to work on something in their delivery. And it makes numbers not all that relevant. It's a lot of work, but I think that we become better evaluators when we're able to sort through the numbers and say, okay, this matters. Why does it matter? There's always got to be an answer as to why. Like, why did, what enabled this player to go on a 5 home run streak, like over the course of a week, like hit 5 home runs in the week? Like, why did that happen? And if we can answer the why to every question, then it makes it, the evaluation process just flow a little easier, rather than just, you know, saying, hey, this dude raked. He hit 30 some home runs this year. But what else did he do? And why did he hit 30 home runs? Like, was it backed by strong EVs and contact rates? Like, what kind of home park was he playing the majority of his games in? What level was he at? And I also think that the age to level argument is completely out the window at this point. Look at the way we've seen teams push players. I just don't think age to level matters, because guys aren't staying at levels long enough for it to matter at all. I mean, we're talking about like a Roman Anthony type who was drafted last year, who just turned 19 in June. I think it was May or June. He went from single A to double A. Like, he went single A, high A, double A over the span of the season. And he's 19. He's going to be in the majors probably the end of next year. Age to level doesn't really matter. Because also, look at the performance. He was not good in single A. But why was he not good at single A? Well, I think my answer to that is that Roman Anthony's a very passive hitter. Like, he knows the strike zone. And he got so many non-competitive pitches in single A. He did not get a lot of pitches to hit. So he took a lot of walks. He hit the ball on the ground a lot, because when he was getting into counts where he wasn't swinging early in counts, so he's getting a 2-strike counts. He's having to protect. He's not getting a lot of good pitches to hit. So I think that affected a lot of things. And I think that those kind of things really matter with evaluation. And a long way to say, like a very long-winded way to say that I think watching the game is highly important. Knowing who a player is and what they project to be is much more important than what the numbers say about said player. And knowing that, one, I mean, like, the DSL numbers aren't all that relevant. Like, I'd rather look at a player's body and say, like, okay, Joindre Vargas, like, didn't matter how he performed to me, because Joindre Vargas is an athlete. Dude's 6'4", like, chiseled. Like, he's what you want to bet on. Like, no matter the performance or not. And I think that's kind of how my process has evolved over time, to lean less on the numbers and more on what can I project this player to be in the future when they make it to the majors.
Yeah, the stats in the box scores tell you the what. Like, what a player is doing right now on the surface level. And then you got to find out the why. And you can find out the why several different ways. I think there's not like one perfect answer to that. You know, we advanced metrics, watching the game, you know, talking with scouts, reading other reports, people that have seen him, because obviously no matter how much baseball we watch, we can't watch every single player, every single game, every single day. I wish I could just sit down and just watch baseball from sun up till sundown. That's not how the world works, unfortunately, but yeah, that's kind of like my process has changed a bit in that regard as well. It's, you know, look at, you know, I think, and you can look at the, you know, surface stats to a degree. I'm like, all right, this player is on a power bench. Why is he on a power bench? Like, I think it's a starting point to have you dive further into something. Like, all right, this player is having a dominant month. Why is he having a dominant month? Or this player is struggling. Why is he struggling? So whether, and you can, again, try to dig further into metrics. You know, maybe watch some video. You know, maybe there's, you know, there's a swing change. You know, and it's hard to do that. Obviously, again, we can't do that for every single player, but also not trying to overreact to those, you know, binges or, you know, slumps or whatever. And so sometimes you'll see me like, all right, a player might be struggling. Like for instance, I don't think I moved, you know, Emmanuel Rodriguez, for example. Did I move him down my rankings when he was struggling? Sure, but I don't think it was like a massive drop off, because, you know, you got to, again, this is something I've been harping on too. I go in that case by case and look at each profile individually. I'm like, all right, there's still a lot of good here. And, you know, he kind of corrected things, had a pretty good second half. He's right back up and as being, you know, top 25 caliber prospect. But there's always stuff to learn. Like, the world of prospect evaluation is seemingly always changing. You know, from when I started ranking prospects, geez, what was it, 6-7 years ago? Well, in terms of, you know, actually on a website, not just on my own little spreadsheet on my own little computer. You know, it's changed so much in just the, you know, last 5-7 years or so. And every year it seems like, you know, there's a new nuance to the prospect evaluation, but it kind of still boils down to the same thing. And again, I don't think there's one perfect way to evaluate. I think you can, you know, find success evaluating several different ways, but a lot goes into it. A lot of different things go into it. It's not like, all right, one thing, boom, that's the way you do it. There's a lot of ingredients go into prospect evaluation. That's why, again, like, what kind of looping back around to one of the earlier things we touched on in this episode was always trying to get better, always learning. You know, there's so many great people out there, both, you know, redraft analysts, dynasty analysts, prospect analysts, even ones that aren't really fantasy focused like we are here. Just always trying to learn and always trying to get better, because if you don't, then you fall behind and you're trying to play catch up. And that's something I don't want to ever try to have to play catch up with my analysis. I'm always trying to put out the best analysis I can, whether it's here on Toolshed, on my Patreon, for RotoBall, or for FTN, just, you know, putting out tweets, you know, on Twitter, X, whatever, you know, whatever Elon likes to call it these days. But yeah. I think that's it's always important and always good to keep in mind, for sure. Anything else you wanted to hit on, Chris?
I guess let's something good to close out this year. Like, one thing we've talked about, quite a few things, but a singular thing that we did this year that we feel like helped our growth. So, like, one thing that we feel like really made a difference in maybe our playing, our evaluation, whatever it may be. So I was kind of thinking that. So I can go first, and that way you have a minute to think. But
go ahead.
So I would say, like, this year, like, my goal was to be a better evaluator of prospects. And that's all obviously every year. But this year I really went in with the intention that I was going to build connections and talk to people. Like, not be afraid of people at the ballpark that, you know, may have felt like they were so much above me, whether they were scouts or analysts or front office people. And I met a lot of unique people this year that I connected with that I feel like really helped. And it come with talking with people and asking them questions. I mean, like, you would never believe that you would see Heim Bloom in a high ballpark and talk to him, or talk to Alex Anthopoulos over in Gwinnett at a AAA game. But not only people of that caliber, because they're not going to give you a lot of wisdom, but it's cool to say you talk to them. But talking to people, like, I met the Red Sox director of international scouting at a game, and I talked to him for a long time, and he taught me a lot. He's the reason that I was in on Yordani Monegro before he was even in complex ball. Like, this guy was like, hey, have you seen this guy? I'm like, no, I haven't seen anybody that's obviously not in at least single A, but he's like, you need to be in on this guy. And he started showing me some stuff, and like, scouts, like, I've connected with so many scouts that are just really cool, down to earth people that are willing to share insight and talk and help out. And I think that's the case, like, in the baseball community in general. Like, I always want to be somebody that can give back and help. And I think that we see that in the fantasy space, but also I think in the baseball world in general, like, talking with people, there's people that are willing to help you grow and learn. And those connections are really key. Like, I got to experience some really unique stuff this year from the connections that I made. And so, like, this year was just a start from that standpoint. I'm hoping next year can kind of be even bigger of connections and getting to know more people, not only in the fantasy world, but also in the game of baseball itself. Because, like I said, those things are where we really learn, like, hearing different people's perspectives. Scouts look at things differently. You know, front office people look at things differently, and you talk to a lot of different people, and I think it's very helpful. So I guess I would encourage, if you're listening, say, don't be afraid to ask questions, because for the longest time, like, I was afraid to ask questions to people. Like, don't go up and talk to a scout, like, in the middle of the game, like, in the middle of an inning if he's writing something down. Like, don't do that, because this is their job. Like, they report to general managers. So, like, don't interrupt their work, but find opportunity to talk to them. And it can really create some unique connections. And I think that's something that was really good for me this year, is just not being afraid to ask questions, and in doing so, making a lot of good connections.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that kind of circles back to always trying to grow, always trying to get better and learn from others that have been in, doing this longer than we have. So yeah, absolutely, 100% agree with all of that. Something I kind of, what I thought of for this is just trusting your process and trusting, like, how do I word this? Trusting, like, your thought, like on a certain player. Like, this is something that I've kind of took until really this year to be fully trusting in my own self and what I'm doing in my process, whether it be evaluating, especially on the ranking side too. Like, how many times I wanted to, like, you know, bump a player up super high or vice versa, drop them down super low, but I'm like, eh, I don't know, that probably won't be received well. And you know, obviously I don't let, you know, the public perception influence my rankings, but there's times that, where I have held off where I'm like, ah, no, that's too bold or too outlandish. You know, like honestly, you know, I people know that I moved, you know, Wyatt Langford to number one about a month or so ago. Wrote an article on and over on my Patreon. I wanted to, maybe not Wyatt Langford, but I had been thinking about dropping Holiday from the number one spot for a while now. And absolutely nothing. It's Holiday. Obviously, he is a phenomenal player, you know, reached triple A at such a young age, very bright future. But just looking at how I valued him for fantasy and so many other names that we have in that top tier, the Langfords, the Camineros, the Cheerios, the Lawlers, etc., the Cruz, and like, all right, is he number one for fantasy purposes? So I kind of wanted to, you know, make that change back in, you know, June and not in August, September. So really just trusting in oneself and like, all right, you know what? I don't care. This is what I think. I think this player should be ranked here, or this is what I think of, you know, a player's profile or either their hit tool, whatever. But always be ready, because if you're putting your work out there on Twitter or on a website or a podcast, you people will probably ask you questions like, hey, especially if it's something kind of bold, like, hey, why do you think that? Why do you, like, for me, why do you have Wyatt Langford number one? Or why do you think this guy could be a 30 home run hitter? Or why do you think there's, you know, contact issues here? Maybe he doesn't hit for high enough average, you know, something like that. Always be ready to back up and kind of explain your reasoning. I think as long as you can explain your reasoning and trust that whatever decision you made or whatever thought you had, you came about by trusting your process, then I think you'll be fine. Like, just, and that's something that, again, it took me until this year to really fully trust myself. I'm like, all right, I'm putting this guy number one. I have my reasonings behind it, and I'll answer all those questions if people are like, oh, why are you doing that? So trusting the process and trusting yourself, I think, is something that now, I think I've gotten a little bit better every year, but I think I took the biggest step in that this year, and I'm happy about that. And hopefully, you know, 2024 and beyond, I can continue trusting my process, improving my process, and doing the best I can. So I guess that's my positive takeaway from this. But I think that's going to wrap us up, though. Kind of a, again, different episode for us here on Toolshed to kick off the off season, something we both kind of had mentioned, you know, over the last month or so, like, hey, this would be kind of a fun episode to do after the season ends, kind of this reflecting and, you know, like a post-mortem kind of thing with 2023, at least the fantasy season now in the books. So hopefully this was an enjoyable episode. We didn't really talk players at all, just more so process and personal thoughts on everything. But I think this was a lot of fun, though. I had a blast kind of getting things out here, kind of talking through everything, and we'll probably do more of these in the future. But back to your normally scheduled Toolshed podcast. Here moving forward, you get a lot of fun content kicking off this off season. We'll probably, again, be down to just one episode a week for the next, at least next month or so. But a lot of fun content, and obviously AFL right around the corner, and we'll give a lot of content on that as well. But for now, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you to all listeners for tuning in again. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.